Short and sweet. That's what we've done with this episode of the Vermont Edition podcast. I'm Matthew Smith, producer of Vermont Edition, and I wanted to say thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. The new $2 trillion federal stimulus package contains many different programs to help both individuals and businesses of all sizes. As we've learned, it's a very complicated law that also includes a one-time cash payment of $1,200 for most people. Today on Vermont Edition, we're going to take a look at this new package and try to get a better understanding of what it means to folks in Vermont. And our guest to discuss this is Congressman Peter Welch. Congressman, many, many thanks for being available today.
Thank you.
Congressman Welch, just to start off with, how has your office, both in Vermont and in Washington, D.C., had to adapt now to the coronavirus?
We're all working at home, really, just like everyone else. So we're doing the best we can, working remotely. We're doing a lot of video conferences, a lot of telephone conferences, and depending on the internet for communication. So that's the new normal. I was just talking with the governor, and that's essentially pretty much how he's doing it as well.
And in the course of your daily operations, how hard has it been to adhere to the 6-foot social distancing rule?
Well, working from home makes that a lot easier. And frankly, we've been pretty scrupulous about it. I just came from a press conference with the governor, and he has an arrangement there where they put markers down so each of us stands about 6 feet apart. And then, as you know, the press is not all in the room. Many are patched in through the phone, and the press tries to say that 6 feet apart as well. So it's hard, but we're none of us are going out and around and doing the kind of interactions that is typical, particularly, you know, Governor Scott gets around the state enormously and is always speaking to groups, and he is not able to do that. And I do much the same. And it all happened very suddenly. You know, it was only a couple of weeks ago that 1 a.m. we were on the House floor and we were voting on the second package related to the virus. And there were 600 of us on the floor. And earlier on Friday, I was in the Energy and Commerce Committee, and Dr. Fauci was testifying and also explaining that he was starting to recommend these social distancing guidelines. But there were probably 150 or 200 people in that room as he was talking about social distancing. So obviously, it was intellectually something that was on the table but not implemented. And it was really right after that that the urgency of actually implementing the social distancing as the best means of trying to bend the curve, I think, was widely adopted. And, of course, Governor Scott has been quite assertive, and rightly so, about implementing that here in Vermont.
So, Congressman, there's some talk of bringing the House and the Senate back to Washington in the next 2 or 3 weeks. How is that going to be possible and still be able to vote?
It's really not. I think that's wishful thinking. I mean, even President Trump, who hoped that we could get back to normal by Easter, has said he wants to extend these guidelines to April 30. And I think there's a growing awareness that we really have to be guided by the science and the facts and the medical advice. And, of course, that's based on data, because the worst thing that we can do for our health and the worst thing we can do for our economy is to relax the urgency of social distancing prematurely. Because if we do that, we think we're making progress, but we're really not there yet, we could have a surge in the disease and the spreading of the disease. So Dr. Fauci, what he testified to was it's much better to err on the side of doing too much too soon when it comes to social quarantining. You know, he'd rather look back and say, you know, we did a little more than we needed to for maybe a little bit longer. And I think that's a consensus point of view now. And I happen, by the way, to think that's the right advice for how the federal government, in its unique role as the backstop here financially, should respond to this on the economics. I'd much prefer to see us, you know, a $2.2 trillion package unanimously passed in the U.S. Senate and all but unanimously in the House. It's extraordinary. But my preference is that we err on the side of doing too much too soon rather than too little too late, so that we can help Vermonters and keep body and soul together while they're social distancing.
So let's start off with Maurice, who is calling from Rutland. Hi, Maurice. Welcome to the program.
Hi. I just had an email that Dr. Fauci had now published a new editorial. Today's date, April 1, the now says that his predictions may be wildly off and maybe 10 times lower than what he had predicted.
I don't have any knowledge of that, so I really can't speak to it.
But that's his new editorial published, so I just wanted to put that up there. I mean, I think we should continue to do what we're doing, but I just wanted to say that that's the new information from Dr. Fauci.
I'm not aware of that. I hope it's true. I mean, all of us will be much relieved if we have less rather than more illness, and certainly less rather than more deaths. But as I understand it, President Trump just in the last couple of days has indicated we're in for a very rough couple of weeks, and he thinks it would be pretty good if we only had a couple hundred thousand deaths, which is more than we lost in Vietnam and more in Korea combined. But so I'm unfamiliar with that particular news item you mentioned, but all of us are doing our best individually and together to try to bend that curve and to try to stop this spread and to save lives.
And during the course of the program today, we're going to see if we can get some more information about that so that we have a better sense of what the thinking is down in Washington. Let's turn to Peter in Brattleboro. Hi, Peter. Welcome to the program.
Hi. I think that most of the low-income wage earners are in a situation where they pay at least one-third of their salaries, if not more, to rent. And I'm wondering if it would save money for the state as they receive funds from the federal government, if they could put a moratorium on rents and mortgages and possibly car loans for a short period of time, let's say a month or something of that nature.
Well, I was just at the press conference and Governor Scott was asked that, and he says they're taking a look at that. You know, the bottom line here is that every situation is different. There's some significant aid here to help folks pay their bills. It's April 1, and this is the first of the month since this crisis emerged. So people have rent due, they have mortgages due, they have car loans due, all those things that you mentioned. And the hope is that this relief from the federal government, the $1,200 check per person, the $600 supplement on unemployment, or small businesses that can get an immediate injection of $10,000, that these things will help. So I think you're going to see that the help is going to allow some people to pay their bills. There are going to be a lot of folks who can't quite figure it out. They won't be able to pay them, and there'll have to be arrangements made. But on that a policy of whether there should be a flat-out moratorium, I think there's going to have to be some hearings in the state to figure out what's a sensible way to approach that.
Because, Congressman, as Peter in Brattleboro was talking about, it's going to take, it sounds like, 3 or 4 weeks for these one-time cash payments to come to folks. They've got bills to pay in the meantime. A lot of folks are going to be in a tough position.
Well, the check, that's exactly right. And by the way, I don't really refer to this as a stimulus program. Because the stimulus is when you're trying to boost the economy. What we're trying to do is save body and soul and keep it together, because the businesses that have had to shut their doors, the individuals who no longer can work, are doing so really because there's a public health order in effect that we've got to stay home in order to fight this virus. And that means that how do people pay their bills, buy groceries, pay the rent? And that's what this money is for. There is going to be a lag. Now, the Secretary of Treasury, Mr. Mnuchin, who's been quite cooperative in the negotiations, is saying that he'll have those checks out, he believes, within 3 weeks. So anybody who has their tax return filed, even from 2018, not this year, and has a direct deposit, they're going to get their check the fastest. I also know that on the unemployment, the state is working very, very aggressively to have this up and running within a week or so. So that $600 supplemental unemployment would be available soon. And then I want to emphasize to Vermonters this $10,000 emergency loan that becomes a grant. If you're a small business, let's say you've got a country store, or let's say you're a hair cutter, or let's say you're an independent contractor and you plow driveways, you are eligible for that $10,000 emergency business grant. And what we're being told is that when you apply for that and you do it through the SBA, you can get that within 3 days. So there is going to be a lag. There's going to be real inconvenience. It's very, very tough for most Vermonters who live paycheck to paycheck, and that, you know, that's the majority of Vermonters. But every effort is being made, both at the federal and the state level, to try to smooth this and get this money in the pockets of Vermonters and Vermonters who have small businesses or are independent contractors as soon as possible.
You know, Congressman, I've heard a lot of people say they think the idea of $1,200 in a cash payment is a nice idea, but it's not sustainable. And we're seeing other countries, I'm thinking now of Canada and also Great Britain, who are making this a regular weekly or biweekly check coming to people so they can see that it's sustainable for at least the next 3 or 4 months. Is there any thought in Congress of doing that here?
Yeah. I don't think there is right now, but it's a very valid point. I mean, if you're a family of four, let's say, and you've got two qualified dependents, you can get $3,400. That's going to help, but it's not sustainable. In $1,200, if you're a family and your income is $50,000 a year, let's say, then that's 1 week. So that will not do it. And that's where two other things I think will be helpful. One is the supplemental unemployment. So if you're laid off as a result of this COVID virus, you are entitled to whatever you would receive in Vermont unemployment, and then $600 additional from the federal government unemployment, and that can last up to 4 months. That's sustainable for 4 months. That's a real amount of money that you can count on while you're following the public health guidelines and your business is not open. The other program that I think can help in a sustainable we're talking in the short term here, is the payment protection plan that small businesses can apply for. And that means they can apply and get a grant of up to 250% of their monthly payroll and use that money to continue paying their staff and to pay other expenses associated with the shutdown, like rent or mortgage. So that's something that has at least short-term four-month or so sustainability. There is, I think, a willingness on the part of Congress, and it has to be Congress, to take a look at this to see whether we have to do more. But again, people are at home and businesses have shuttered to follow the directives of the public health requirements, not because there's an economic downturn, not because they're sick, there's something wrong with their business. It's all because we are experiencing something that this country, the world we live in, has not experienced for 100 years. And that was in 1918, there was the global pandemic of what was called the Spanish flu. And we've had some pandemics, but SARS and MERS, but they weren't as extensive across the globe as the coronavirus is. So we're literally, all of us, in government, the state government, in federal government, in our families, in our businesses here in Vermont, going through something that hasn't happened in a century. So we're going to have to find our way here. But it's very, very, very reassuring to me that we're seeing our state be so energetic in its response and having bipartisan support for this extraordinary $2.2 trillion package in Washington.
Let's talk to Frick in Brattleboro. Hi, Frick. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Peter Welch. Frick Sprite here. Good to
Hi.
Hear from you.
Good.
I've been concerned for a long time about how poorly funded Section 8 is and how much good could be done on many fronts if we just fully funded it. And here is an opportunity, I think, to finally get that done. And I'm hoping that you guys in the next package will push that past whatever resistance comes from the Senate.
And could we just explain for everybody who's listening, when you talk about Section 8 housing, what are you speaking about specifically?
Yeah, it's a HUD subsidy for tenants that they pay one-third of their income for rent, and as long as they are appropriately housed in terms of the size of the apartment they're in and the pricing, that's all they pay. And so as their income goes up or down, their subsidy covers whatever the balance is. And at this point, there have been many year-long waits once you're on the list to get the subsidy. And the list is usually closed, so you can't even get on the list most of the time. So there are a majority of people who might qualify don't get it because it's yet another program that Congress has not actually funded, even though they voted it in.
All right, let's see if we can get a response from Congressman Welch.
Well, two things. Number one, Section 8 housing for low-income individuals is extremely important. I'm a strong supporter, and I support full funding. But second, I also know that housing is a huge problem for people who wouldn't qualify for Section 8. It's in taking an increasingly large part of the incomes of hardworking Vermonters. So rents are really high, and housing is a huge issue in Vermont, particularly in places like Chittenden County. So, in fact, I think in addition to addressing Section 8 housing issues that help, we've got to do something that make housing more affordable for all Vermonters. So thank you for that.
Let's talk to Peter in Burlington. Hey, Peter, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you for having me, and thank you for Congressman Welch for being here. I work in a small manufacturing company in Burlington, one that's lucky enough to have been designated an essential business under Governor Scott's guidelines. And I think we found this week we entered unintended consequences from the stimulus package. Last week after the stay-at-home order came out, we were flooded with applications. We were trying to increase our staffing by 10% and said, for the good of the community, we'll even go up by 20%. And we were flooded with applications, and we had picked out even five individuals to start this week. And on Monday, after the stimulus package came out, four of those five canceled on us, three of which said, it pays me more with the extra $600 from the federal government. It's paying me more to stay at home than you can pay me, so I'm just going to stay home. And when you do the math, I think they're right. I mean, we pay well, $16 to over $20 an hour, depending on with the shift premiums. But they're getting between $22 and $25 an hour between state unemployment and this extra $600 from the federal government. And it's actually more financially beneficial for them not to go to work. And I'm worried in the short run, we could use people. And in the long run, how do you then get people to come back out of the workforce and not stay on the sidelines for as long as possible?
Well, I have heard that, and the governor mentioned it, was talking about it today. But number one, if a person has a job, they're not entitled to unemployment if they voluntarily leave. So the unemployment rule requiring that you be laid off as a result of employer action, or in this case, the COVID virus, means that if you just leave a job because of what you described, then in fact you're not eligible for unemployment. As far as a person, and that's it. But there'll probably be some issues that have to be worked out as we go along. The whole point of the unemployment and the supplemental unemployment was to acknowledge that for many, many workers, the vast majority who've been laid off and haven't been so fortunate as to work for a company like yours that got the exception so they can show up to work, the vast majority of them are going to face enormous economic insecurity. And that's the general rule. And what you're describing is the exception. But I see the point you're making.
And Congressman, the question that came up at the governor's press briefing today is that there are probably a number of people who are working in essential businesses. These are the folks who are working in supermarkets. They're working at the drugstores. They're on the front line there and probably taking a pretty big risk in doing so, even with the precautions that have been put into place. And yet they probably, in some cases, aren't making as much money as they could if they were eligible for unemployment.
Well, that's true, and I'm actually sympathetic to their situation. I mean, should there be some recognition, perhaps through the government, if the employer can't do it, for the hazards that they're facing? I mean, keep in mind that just the contradiction here. We're being told that we actually shouldn't go into the grocery store except when we absolutely have to. And we're being told, and rightly so, that when we shop, let's do it for 2 weeks instead of for 2 days. But those folks who are working are being exposed to every one of us who's coming in and obviously face a hazard that those of us who are not working there by social distancing can avoid. So let's be not just respectful of those folks on the front line who are now the cleaning staff, the clerks, our neighbors. That maybe we should have some consideration for the exceptional role that we're asking them to play in this extraordinary time.
Let's talk to Richard, who is calling from Quebec. Hey, Richard, welcome to the program.
Hello, thank you.
What's your question?
Hi. Hi.
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay, I'm a retired U.S. citizen from Vermont most of my life. Living in Quebec now. I receive Social Security payments, and I was just wondering, am I eligible for any of these cash payouts?
Well, Social Security recipients are definitely entitled to the cash payout if their income is $75,000 or less. I don't know what I don't know whether your status as living in Canada affects that, so our office can check that, and we can get back to you.
And Congressman, for people who are listening to the program, like Richard, who have some questions and want to be able to submit those questions to your office, what's the best way for them to do that?
Welch.house.gov. And just email us or call us. You can go to our website, and we'll get back to you as quickly as we can. And by the way, Bob, Bernie, Patrick, and I are all working together on trying to make certain that we can answer questions from Vermonters, because there's going to be a lot. Does your business qualify for this $10,000? And most businesses do. That question from the person living in Canada who is an American citizen, I assume, and receiving Social Security, there will be so many of these questions, and our job is to try to help you answer them and to navigate the bureaucracy to the extent that's an impediment. So I encourage all Vermonters. That's our job. We work for you. We're trying to help solve these issues as best we can.
And do I understand the part of the law, the $10,000 grant for small businesses, I think you were referring to this earlier in the program, is that something that's now available to all small businesses to help them with their immediate needs?
Yes. It is, and I really want to encourage our small businesses to make that application, because that money is supposed to be available within 3 days of your application. Let's hope it works. That's ambitious. But this is just a body blow for many of our small businesses that just can't get out there. So this can make a difference. And by the way, I want to really emphasize, this is a once-in-a-century event, and this – the cost of compliance is enormous, and that's why the federal government has to step forward and provide this kind of economic backstop. And the goal here is to make it possible for these small businesses to be viable once the lights go back on. And the goal is to try to maintain that connection that our employers and our employees have. You know, so many of our small businesses here in Vermont, they're family affairs. And the proprietors, the folks who run the business, regard their employees as family. And they would do everything they could to try to maintain their wages, but they can't possibly do it when the doors are shut. So this program of payroll protection is something that can help some of those businesses do it, with the goal that when the lights go back on, that there's a reconnection between those folks who between the employer and the employee.
Let's go back to our listeners. A lot of folks have questions for you, Congressman Welch, and we really appreciate you taking the time to be available to do this. Let's talk to Terry in Richmond. Hi, Terry. Welcome to the program.
Yes. Hey, good morning. Good morning. Yes, I just had the issue in kind of along the lines of the gentleman before in Burlington about trying to hire, you know, new employees. And he made the point that, you know, individuals that are laid off at this point will take a financial cut by going back to work. I'm a truck driver. I work for a global company, and our hours have been cut nearly in half.
Mm-hmm.
But yet I'm considered an essential employee. So I guess my big thing is, where is, you know, at this point, I'm sure a lot of other people are in my same position, where now that our hours have been cut so much, now we're not able to take care of our financial needs, whereas if we were unemployed at this point, we would be able to.
Well, there's, you know what, thanks so much for bringing that up, and thanks for working, but that's brutal on you. If you lose your hours, you lose an income that you're counting on. So here's how it works, I think, in Vermont. You can get partial unemployment, okay? So if you're cut back as a result of COVID virus, the Vermont approach is that you can get partial unemployment, and then that makes you eligible for partial federal unemployment to supplement that. So I think what's out there with the state and the federal under this program may help you with supplementing the income that you lost as a result of the cutback in your hours.
And, Congressman, that's a really important point, because some people, a large number of Vermonters, were laid off completely because they were working for non-essential businesses. But other people like Terry have seen their hours cut back. And there is some assistance for people who have not been totally laid off, but maybe saw their income cut by 50%.
That's exactly right. And there's a lot of Vermonters in that position. I mean, I'm so, you know, what he just described is not unique to him. And it's good that he's working some, but he needs the income from his full 40-hour or 40-hour-plus week. And that's why, you know, the state has always had, or recent years has had, the opportunity to get partial unemployment reflecting cutback in hours. And under the federal bill, we can that's supplemented with a federal contribution. So folks who do have their hours cut back, apply for unemployment.
Let's talk to LJ, who's calling from Barnett. Hey, LJ, how you doing?
Well, I'd be better if this was all behind us, but it's not quite yet. Thank you very much for having me on, and thank you, Congressman, for being there. My question is with specific regard to the massage therapy and bodywork industry. We number between 1,500 and 2,000 who call ourselves in the state of Vermont massage therapists or body workers. Most of us, some work in spa industry or maybe in a health facility like a chiropractic office, but most of us are private practitioners, solo practitioners, and in many cases, we are the major wage earners for our families. Obviously, we're a close contact, very close contact industry, so we're closed, and yet we're not actually employing anyone else because we're private practitioners. So where do we fall into the category of the $10,000 small business grant?
I believe you get it. You know, first of all, you're self-employed. You work really hard. You make an important contribution to the well-being of Vermonters, and My understanding under the legislation is, number one, you'd be entitled to that small business, $10,000. You're a sole proprietor. That's number one. Number two, you're eligible for unemployment, the federal unemployment, because under the emergency legislation that we passed, there was a recognition that many, many, many Vermonters, many, many Americans are self-employed, as you are. And traditionally, you would not be eligible for unemployment, but under the emergency legislation, you would be.
LJ, does that answer your question?
I hope so, but Congressman, can I hold you to that if any of us are having trouble?
The answer, that's my best answer, and call my office. But I know in the unemployment, we definitely changed the law so that independent contractors and folks who are self-employed are eligible. So many Americans and Vermonters are in your situation, and some of them are doing body work like you are. Others plow driveways. Others drive an Uber, and it's real work for them, and they've lost that income. And the legislation is very specific about those folks being entitled to the federal unemployment benefit. And that $10,000 loan, the legislation is written, you know, there's always the rules that have to be played out, but it's written to include acknowledging that self-employed people run a business, and you do that. And again, it's not just massage therapy and body work. It is a person who cuts hair, a person who mows lawns. I mean, all these things that Vermonters do, it's important work, and it's their livelihood, and you're included. That's my explicit understanding.
LJ, it'll be very interesting to see how this story develops over the next week or two, and we encourage you to be in touch with us here at Vermont Public Radio to see if these provisions, these very important provisions, do apply to you and many other self-employed independent contractors in the state of Vermont, because as Congressman Welch said, there are thousands and thousands of people who fall into this category. So this is a very, very important question. Let's talk to Ben in Johnson. Hey, Ben, welcome to the program. Ben, are you there? Well, we'll come back to Ben when we can get him back on the line. So in the meantime, let's talk to Mike in Burlington. Hey, Mike, welcome to the program.
Hello. I'm an Uber driver, and I got some car repairs coming up that I ain't going to get on board. Am I eligible for that grant? And also, my income went down $300 or $400 a week. Am I eligible for partial unemployment?
I think you are. I mean, we were talking to that the massage therapist, body work person, self-employed independent contractor. You know, you as an Uber driver, you'd be considered an independent contractor, and as an independent contractor, you're definitely entitled to the unemployment, and I believe you may well be entitled to the SBA loan. But that, I'll double check on that. But the unemployment, you definitely are.
Mike, are you considered a self-employed person?
I think so. I filed taxes as self-employed.
Okay, so the federal legislation, as Congressman Welch has been telling us, does have some special provisions for self-employed people, and it sounds like the $10,000 small business grant might be available to sole proprietors as well, Congressman.
Well, that's right. And, you know, think about it. An Uber driver, you know, he's got these car expenses coming up. It's not like that the taxi company pays that. He's got to pay that. And if you're an independent contractor, you have significant expenses. You've got to pay your Social Security on both sides, as employer and employee. So that's a big expense that you have to pay. There's so many people in our economy, in our modern economy, in Vermont, and all around the country, who find creative ways to try to make the income they need to pay their bills. And that includes folks driving Ubers or Lyfts. It includes that massage therapist. They're really essential contributors to our economy. They're out of work. largely. The massage therapist obviously is clearly out of work. No matter what she or he does, they can't work. So there's got to be some backstop here, and that's why I have been strongly supportive of them getting some of this help, just like any other business.
Let's talk to Lori, who's calling from Charlotte. Hi, Lori. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator, for all of your work you're doing for Vermonters. It's very much appreciated. I was actually going to call your office later today, but I hopped in my car and heard the broadcast. My question is, my son and his girlfriend were anticipating moving to Vermont to spend the summer and work. They were in Boston. Their school was closed. They subsequently moved to our house earlier than anticipated. They've been looking for jobs. They got jobs at the U.S. Post Office. I told them that since they're living in our home and putting other people at risk, and I wanted them to follow the stay-at-home order, I told them they couldn't work. So are they... Is there any possibility for any benefits for them? It's kind of an unusual situation in that they didn't have a job when they left Boston.
I don't know. I'm not sure they would be covered because the unemployment has generally applied when you have a job and you lose the job as opposed to you're about to enter the labor force. So I think as I speak to you now, on the basis of what I know, I think the answer is no, they wouldn't be entitled to unemployment benefits. But I will I'd be glad to check.
Lori, thanks very much for your phone call. Congressman, we got this email from Ann who writes that the federal bill overlooked a substantial number of young people, like her 21-year-old son. I claimed him as a dependent in 2019, but he graduated college in May of last year. He's now living independently with rent to pay and is risking his life working in a restaurant. But because he was my dependent in 2019, he won't get a relief check. Is this something that Congress might address in the future?
Ann is right about that. In my view, that's a mistake, and I am a co-sponsor of legislation that would change that. I don't know whether we'll be able to get that acted on in time, but that is a problem because the dependents in the bill have to be 16 or under. And in a lot of other federal programs, a dependent can be 24 or less. Or in some cases with health care, it's 26. You know, we keep our kids on our health care plan until they're 26. So I think this was a mistake in the legislation, and I am co-sponsoring legislation to correct it.
Let's turn to Ben, who's calling from Johnson. Hey, Ben, welcome to the program.
How's it going?
Good. Good.
So we have a small construction company, three owners, and we're shut down because we find it too hard to comply and do all that. So we're wondering what we should be filing for. It's a partnership, LLC, and three equal owners. And we're wondering what we need to be looking into doing.
I missed in the beginning. What's the nature of your work?
We're a residential construction company.
Well, I would say, number one, you should be applying for that business grant. That $10,000 business grant. Number two, if it's just the three of you, you don't have employees.
We laid off one employee that we had.
Well, your employee obviously could get unemployment insurance with the supplement, the federal supplement. But the other option you would have would be for applying for the payroll protection program, where you would be able to continue paying him. With through a grant that would be about 250% of your payroll. So what you would get for sure would be, number one, your $1,200 check. Number two, I think the $10,000 emergency business interruption grant. And then, I don't know, three, whether you have any Small Business Administration loans, but you could get forbearance on them for about 6 months.
Ben, does that answer your question?
as the SBA grant, are we applying the business as one or three individual owners?
Be one.
It would be one. So $10,000 would be awarded to the business, and then
correct.
Okay.
Let's talk to Eileen, who's calling from Colchester. Hey, Eileen,
Hi.
Welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for taking my call. Congressman, I was just wondering if, since there are a lot of people that are going to be late on payments because it's taking a while for the government to catch up, if any work has been done with the credit bureaus to make sure that these don't show up as 30 and 60 day delinquencies that could affect people's credit in the long term and the cost of them borrowing for quite some time to come.
There is. Some of it is voluntary, and some of it is the government cajoling. But the goal here is that the credit card companies will waive late fees and not start piling on interest. Some companies have agreed to do that, and there's ongoing consideration about whether we need legislative protection for folks in that situation. Those late fees are brutal, and then that the adverse credit report is also brutal. So what I've seen is that many of the major credit card companies are stepping up and saying no late fees and no adverse credit scoring as a result of a delay. I think it's important to be in touch with whatever you're in this, by the way, car loans as well. There's forbearance on student loans as well. So I think it's very important for you to be in contact with whoever your creditor is to let them know the situation.
Eileen, that was a great question because it affects just about everybody in one capacity or another. Let's get a quick call in from Jeff in North Bennington. Hey, Jeff, welcome to the program.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question about the $1,200 payments that will be going out to individuals. And from what we hear, they will be direct deposited if you have your tax returns, usually direct deposited from your previous year. But in the case where people just have them sent in a check form, will they be issuing checks, or will you need to do anything extra to have that check sent to you, or will they automatically go out in checks if you don't have it direct deposited your returns in the past?
Well, my understanding from Secretary Mnuchin is, number one, the best way, quickest way to get your money is with direct deposit. So if you file taxes and you had direct deposit, that means, according to the secretary, you'll probably get your check within 3 weeks. If you don't have direct deposit, in some cases you don't have it because you don't have to file a tax return. You don't have to file a tax return. The Treasury Department is going to provide a very simple form for you to file, and you could put your direct deposit information on that. Number three, if you don't do anything, but let's say you get Social Security and you're eligible, then you'll get a check in the mail, but they're saying that that could be a couple of months, maybe even 3 months. So that's the slowest way to get the money that you might need today.
Jeff, thanks very much for your phone call. Congressman, we're almost out of time. I'm just wondering, Speaker Pelosi is talking about another stimulus package. In a minute or so, could you tell us what are the chances of that?
I would have said non-existent, but now I think there's a lot more interest. And keep in mind, number one, what we have now, $2.2 trillion, that is just to stabilize us and try to get us through the social distancing period when the economy is essentially largely shut down. Number two, when we come out of this, we're going to have a scarred economy. And it's creating some consensus to finally do what most of us know we should do, significant investment in infrastructure, including investment in broadband, something I was just talking to Governor Scott about. And we have to have in rural America broadband that works for everybody so our kids can do our homework, so we can do telemedicine, so our businesses, when we have to work at home, have access to high-speed internet. So there's a real focus on something that would be vital to our economy across the board. And I'm hopeful, it's something President Trump's indicated support for, I'm hopeful that this will reignite the sense of urgency that this is an investment in our future.
This has been a very helpful look at some of the provisions of the new federal stimulus package. Congressman Peter Welch, many, many thanks for taking the time to be with us and answering these questions today from all our listeners.
Well, thank you, and we're here to work. So call me, Bernie, or Patrick. We'll do everything we can to help you get the information you're entitled to.